Call the House Judiciary Committee to order March 28th, 2011. We're going to work, open a public hearing. We may go to work session on House Bill 2068. We'll have the hearing first.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2068 comes to us from the House Healthcare Committee, where it passed unanimously. It clarifies the authority of the State Board of Psychologist Examiners to impose civil penalties, replaces a $1,000 cap on civil penalties with a $10,000 limit, declares emergency effective upon passage.
Deborah McHugh, please.
Ready?
Yep.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, my name is Deborah McHugh. I'm the executive director of the Board of Psychologist Examiners. This is a housekeeping bill, if you will. Last session, we were given the authority to increase civil penalties from a 1,000 cap to a 10,000 cap under very specific circumstances, up to 10,000. After the bill passed, we recognized that many of us had missed the fact that that amount was named in another place in the bill. There was two places in which $1,000 cap appeared in our law, our statute, and this is a cleanup just to make it consistent. So now rather than two places where it says, one says up to 10,000 and one says up to 1,000, it'll just say up to 10,000 one time. And the thing that we're proposing today is just to take out the other reference to the $1,000 cap. It doesn't change our authority. It doesn't bring us any new revenue. It is simply housekeeping to clear up the fact that we have the authority to impose civil penalties up to $10,000 in certain circumstances.
Any committee? Any questions? What type of penalty would get you, what type of violation would it get you to $10,000?
We've actually listed it in statute after the reference of up to $10,000, and it is, I believe there's five conditions. One is that the incident or the circumstance under which the licensee would be under discipline and that they would have this kind of a fine as if the victim was a minor, particularly vulnerable person, and also for unlicensed practice, folks that are practicing harming the public who are not licensed and are required to be licensed, those folks could be have a $10,000 penalty imposed.
Okay, just a second, please.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So, all we're doing is making the statute consistent.
Yes.
You're not increasing anything.
No.
There's a contradiction in the statute.
Yes.
Thank you.
Anything further, committee? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2068.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2068 to the floor with a due pass.
Committee Representative Barker has moved House Bill 2068 to the floor with a due pass. Any objections, discussion? Call the roll.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Wan.
Aye.
Representative
Grisnow. Aye. Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
Okay, House Bill 2068 will go to the floor with a due pass. Passes. And we need a carrier.
I'll carry this one, Mr. Chair.
You would?
Yeah.
I gotta get one out of the way for this committee. It seems fairly simple to explain.
Representative Shoffler, I'm willing to bet you that there's nine other members could keep that from being simple.
Then we'll spend more effective time on the floor like we did today, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei, do you have a comment?
Well, I think it should be on the consent calendar, Mr. Chair.
He has agreed to carry it. Let's go ahead and let him do it.
Thank you.
I want to hear the explanation. Thank you. All right, we're going to open.
Mr. Chair, I need Mr. Johnson to write up some talking points on the bill for me.
We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3192.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3192 modifies the collection and distribution of proceeds from fines collected on traffic offenses on state highways. Presently under ORS 153630, the distribution of costs depends on two things. First of all, the nature of the court that processes the ticket, and second of all, who issues it. House Bill 3192 would modify this structure and essentially say, in the absence of an explicit agreement with Oregon State Police that a municipality or county in question will enforce traffic laws, that the proceeds will all go to the state.
Okay, is Representative Kopp here?
She can't be here until 2, I know.
Until 2. Okay. Let's have Jeff Leidy, Darren Phillips, and Jerry Riggs come up.
Co-chair is a member of the committee. My name is Jeff Leidy. I'm the past president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. I've been a trooper with the Oregon State Police going on 25 years. This bill is primarily about ethics. It's about integrity. Currently throughout the state, there are agencies and municipalities who are basically mining the state highways for revenue. Nothing more, nothing less. We do not raise revenue with citations as an organization. When I work every day, I don't decide whether or not somebody gets a citation based on revenue. I decide that based on the gravity of the situation and my contact with that person, not whether or not my agency needs revenue. I currently deal in Marion County. I work in Marion County and South Clackamas County. We have a traffic team by the county in Marion County who works almost exclusively on I-5 south of Salem. They don't cover accidents on that state highway. They don't stop for disabled motorists. They simply issue traffic citations, garnering millions of dollars for the county, not for the state. While the Oregon State Police have the primary responsibility for answering all calls for traffic crashes, disabled motorists, and other crimes on that state highway. The problem is, the general public don't see the color of the uniform. When you get stopped by a police officer and issue a citation, quite frankly, many people don't realize what agency it was. And personally, I don't like getting painted with that brush. I'm going to turn it over to the current president of the State Police Officers Association, Darren Phillips. He's got some local examples of what's going happening here locally and throughout the state.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Darren Phillips. I'm the president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association, currently a 22-year state trooper. I came here prepared to give you example after example after example of issues with traffic teams. I've got a few here that I'll hit on lightly, but I know from working in Marion County and a variety of other counties that the majority of the traffic teams have now exempted their traffic team members from responding to anything that's not a traffic citation. Crashes, domestic assaults, whatever it might be, and I've talked to many of the deputies that work alongside those people that are pretty disgruntled about that as well. I'll mimic Jeff's comments about ethics and police work, and the one thing that always drew me to the state police was the fact that I could choose the level of
corrective action I felt was necessary, from a citation to a warning or whatever it might be. I like that. Some of these examples aren't surprising to me, but for instance, crashes where traffic team deputies sitting on the freeway, on the opposite side of the freeway, shooting LIDAR, checking speeders, and doesn't get out of his car to walk over and check and see if the people are injured or need help. The trooper shows up and the deputy leaves. Examples of crashes where a traffic team deputy backs up half a mile to check on a person, his car's rolled over, and as the trooper shows up, he drives away. Rather than, as we all know, and as a trooper, I would stand there and assist them in any way I could. And I know from talking to many of these traffic team members, when you're required to go out and write 20 or 30 plus citations a day to stay on that traffic team to generate funds, in my 22 and a half years, there's been a couple times I've written 22 or 23 tickets, but I could count them on one hand. That doesn't mean I didn't stop 30 or 40 cars. It just means that I didn't write everybody a ticket or two or three or four tickets just because I needed to stay on that traffic team and generate funds. I don't really feel a need to go through, because I have people call me daily within the state police and outside the state police giving me examples of these traffic teams and how they're operating. I think it just suffices to say I could give plenty of them. And it puts the agencies in a very unethical situation, and the officers, I don't think, want to do it. But unfortunately, it's become a huge part of their budgets, so they do it. And I'll pass it off to Jerry Gregg, who is an illustrious previous member of the Oregon State Police.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Gerald Gregg, and I reside in Wilsonville, Oregon. I'm here today to testify in favor of this bill because I believe that the objective of law enforcement in Oregon should be fair and impartial treatment of the citizens of Oregon and the visitors to the state. Anytime there's an enforcement contact, the decision as to how to dispose of that enforcement contact, whether to issue a citation or to settle it with a warning, really should be decided upon based on the totality of the circumstances, and should no way, in my opinion, be influenced either directly or indirectly by the need to direct revenue to a specific endpoint. I've heard for years from friends and members of the public, well, you guys just write tickets to create revenue, to get money. And I think that is a very prominent public perception that this bill would go a long ways to put to rest.
Committee members, Chris Shaw.
Thank you. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of really nice people that I see in the building every day are going to come up and deny some of the things you guys said. So I'd imagine you have some kind of data to back up this frequency of tickets for local and county officers out on the road relative to state police.
Representative Schaffler, co-chairs and members of the committee, all you have to do is ask for a copy of their citations, and you'll see exactly what's going on. And nothing in this bill prohibits them from doing that on county roads or city streets. They want to mine their own, their own voters for revenue. Go for it. But, in closing, I'll say this. I was just on the listening to the exchange on the House floor a few minutes ago, and Representative Matthews spoke of integrity. And I couldn't agree with him more. It's all we have. It's who we are. And this, what's going on here, is just absolutely unethical. And daily, I get the same thing as Jerry does. Well, the only reason you're out there for is just the revenue. And that's not right.
Mr. Chair, just quick follow-up. And I agree with you, Jeff, and I support the bill. I'm on the bill. But I would still like some black and white evidence provided to me in this committee showing the difference between the citation book of an average day of a state police officer, an average day of some of these folks out there, and use your word, Jeff, mining the community for revenue. I just would have liked to have that. And if it's easy to get, as you say, Jeff, which I believe you, I don't think it'll be a problem getting up here. So,
Representative Schaffler, members of the committee, co-chairs, I don't think they're going to give it to me. They may give it to you.
Mr. Chair, when they come up, I'll request it of them. Thank you.
They eventually will, one way or the other.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to make sure that I'm understanding what it is the three of you are saying, is that when there is a state highway that goes through a municipality, such as a city like Milwaukee, where I live, so if the Milwaukee police gives a ticket on a city highway or a state highway, then the city gets to keep that fine. Is that correct?
Representative Tomei, co-chair, member of the committee, there's an exception in here that if you have the responsibility for responding to traffic crashes, calls for service, much like the state highway through Milwaukee or Woodburn or Jervis or Hubbard, then you would enter an agreement, and then it would be... fines would go to your agency or to the that particular county or municipality. This is Coburg.
To help me understand the agreement, I read it, but I'm just having trouble understanding it. So the agreement says what?
The agreement would say if your agency is the primary responder to that section of state highway for traffic crashes and calls for service, then that would be exempt. Yeah, this is what's happening now is nothing more than Coburg, and I'm sure there's a few of you on this committee that remember what used to happen in Jordan Valley. That's exactly what's going on here. So,
last one, if I may.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You. So, Highway 99 goes through Milwaukee, and right now they have the photo radar. So, if they use that on Highway 99 through Milwaukee, then if they sign this agreement, then the money that they get from that fine would go to Milwaukee? Is that correct?
I'm going to assume so, because if Milwaukee PD is the one who responds to that, right. If a traffic crash happens at that intersection where there's a photo radar, we're not responding to it. They are. So, I mean, that would...
Okay, I understand. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Was that Hicks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I-5 is a state highway. And so if a county wanted to assume principal responsibility for I-5, is that possible under this bill?
With an agreement.
Okay, so the agreement could apply to, if I may follow up, Mr. Chair, thank you. So, okay, that's what I wanted to clarify, an agreement. A county could agree to set principal patrol responsibility for I-5.
Well, the cities could, too. If you take Portland PD, for example, they have the primary responsibility for the freeway system within their city limits.
Further,
sure. Senior Trooper Lee, I am curious if the legislature ever stepped up to the plate and gave the state police more dollars to be able to go out and hire more troopers. Probably what you're experiencing right now through this bill, what you're trying to do, wouldn't occur.
Oh, I disagree. Representative Olson, member of the committee, chair, co-chairs. I think it would still be going on.
Okay.
There's money to be made there. And I've never, I don't write citations for revenue, and neither should, I don't think anybody else. That should not be the intention of stopping a car for a traffic violation is revenue.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. This point of clarification, if a county or municipality doesn't agree into an explicit agreement with OSP to assume primary responsibility for the enforcement of traffic citations, after that happens, will OSP continue to have any sort of an enforcement role, or will things sort of flip where then the county is responding to accidents but OSP won't? Or would they continue if you came across a crash or an abandoned motorist or something, you would have a sort of first-line responsibility until that other actor took over?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, it happens now. If we come across an accident, we cover it. Any road, any code. That's what we do. We don't decide. We don't go to an accident and say, I'm not covering this. If we get called to an accident, I'm a resident trooper in North Marion, South Clackamas County. I cover accidents all the time on county roads, on city streets. I answer calls for service anywhere, anytime. I don't make my decisions based on whether I'm getting paid for it by that county or that city.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to keep asking these questions, but I thought what I heard you saying was that if that municipality agreed to take the responsibility, if there's a stalled car or an accident or whatever, then they would also agree to take the fines generated from traffic infractions. Am I understanding what you said?
Representative Tomei, co-chair as a member of the council, I guess to clarify this, best way to is give you an example. Milwaukee and 99E, within their city limits, they respond. If a crash comes in, it goes to Milwaukee PD.
If they
need help, the Oregon State Police will respond.
But I guess in looking at this law, I don't see where it states that that's the case. That if Milwaukee, as an example, agrees to take responsibility for that section of the highway that's in Milwaukee, that then they would be able to collect the fines. But I don't see anywhere. So do you have the bill in front of you?
I do.
So could you look at that and tell me where the bill says that?
A city or county may enter into an agreement with Oregon
line,
State.
Please?
Oh, I'm sorry. It would be line 3.
Thank you.
Section 3. A city or county may enter into an agreement with the Oregon State Police that provides that the city or county would be the primary law enforcement agency responsible for enforcing traffic laws on specific portions of state highways. And
traffic laws are different from, say, an accident or an abandoned car.
Yes, I would agree that they are, but traffic crashes are also part of the responsibilities. If normally when there's a traffic crash, a traffic law has probably been broken. But that's not always the case. But answer calls for services, I guess part and parcel, ma'am.
I'm sorry to keep badgering this, but it seems to me that what you're saying, if there's enforcing traffic laws, but if there's an accident, that doesn't mean that a law has been broken, right?
Representative Tomei, not necessarily.
I guess I'm not clear that what this law says is what you mean for it to say, or at least I don't think there's it's exactly saying what it is that apparently I think you want. Can anybody else help me? Any lawyers? Anybody?
Staff. Co-chairs, Representative Tomei. My read on that point is, okay, so you enter into an agreement to enforce all traffic laws, and I
right.
think the interpretation of that's basically going to sort of be plenary, all portions of the vehicle code, everything pertaining to roads, and whether that explicitly includes responding to crashes, I mean, I wouldn't have a citation, but I think there's sort of a consensus here that that is a portion of enforcing, because if you have an obstructed roadway, a dangerous condition, something like that, you will be violative of the traffic code in that portion. So to enforce that, maintain clear roadways and such, it is going to implicate that part of the agreement. Does that make sense?
Well, no. Because I think what it is that you're wanting is any kind of any problems that are going to be in the roadway, that if Milwaukee has agreed that they're going to take on that roadway, any problems in that roadway, Milwaukee will take care of. But as it says now, it's law enforcement. It's not necessarily any other problem. I mean, I can imagine somebody going off the highway into a brush and it doesn't obstruct traffic at all. So traffic is still moving, so no law was violated. Somebody had a heart attack and went off the road.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think, and Aaron, I think what Representative Tomei is really trying to get at is all incidents.
Yes.
Not specifically.
Correct.
Just
mm-hmm.
traffic-oriented where a citation might be issued.
Right.
Fair point.
But even without a citation, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair. So even without a citation, what I'm getting at, if there are any problems, not necessarily a law violation, where a citation would be in effect. But it seems like what you're wanting is that Milwaukee, I'm using Milwaukee as an example because I live there. So if Milwaukee is saying, I'm going to take responsibility for the traffic on 99 that goes to Milwaukee, it's not just law violations, it's any kind of problems that are happening on 99. That's sort of what you're wanting, isn't it?
Representative Tomei, members of the committee, maybe you're misinterpreting what the gist of this is that within their city limits, they respond to those calls anyway. we would respond to those calls if asked to go. If it has nothing to do with a traffic law or the violation of a traffic law, if it's within their city limits, they're going to be taking care of it anyway. All we're talking about is the fines generated on state highways.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffler.
And that was my question. I think you answered it, Jeff. What's the law speak to now? Whose responsibility is it, and who responds to an incident where no laws have been broken, but somebody had a health issue and went in the ditch? And I don't think this really impacts that, to my knowledge.
Representative Schaffler, members of the committee, no.
Chair Barker. Thank you. I'm just thinking my city of Beaverton might be upset if I tell them they have to go make an agreement with the state police in the olden days when some of us worked in the West Slope office, Washington County and the Beaverton office. Washington County had a big state police presence. They don't anymore. And, for example, the city of Beaverton has some red light cameras and so on. So I would, on Farmington, which is a state highway. So they would have to come to the state police to make an agreement to be able to keep the revenue from that?
Representative Barker, co-chairs and member of the committee, that's the way this is written, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I can understand they may have some trepidation about that, but just like Portland PD handles all the calls for service within the freeways system of the state of Portland, I don't think that's going to be an issue. I don't see us getting a lot more people in the near future.
I don't see, if I may, Co-Chair, I just don't see, I see very few state police in Washington County, except probably on the far western end, just because of the way the sheriff's, pretty much assumed responsibility in closer. So thank you.
Jeff, you have equipment violations, you've got hazardous violations, you've got suspended drivers and other type of licensing violations. As a general rule, I realize there's some circumstances different. Does the department that you work for have any type of overreaching or policy about the issuing of multiple citations? In other words, the guy doesn't have a suspended vehicle license. He's got a cracked mirror. He doesn't have this. He doesn't have. Are you going to write? What are we doing as your agency regarding that? And what if it's an equipment violation, and he's got speed and a licensing. You got two or three things, but not in the same category. And so what would your agency, under normal circumstances, realize there may be some mitigating thing that caused you to issue more than one, and then how does that compare? Maybe I'm interested whether these teams are out there writing 3, 4, and 5 tickets on a stop, because that we may have to change that by statute. I don't even allow them to do it. That's what it's going to take to stop it.
You want to answer that one?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, in my experience with the state police, we don't have any policy that says you can't write multiple tickets, but the training, and I was part of the training in cadre for many years, the training is pick the hazardous moving violation, certainly write a citation for that. Everything else included would be a verbal warning. There really is no reason to write 3, 4, 5 citations. Now, the one exception to that, and I think you'll see this across the board with most law enforcement, is a suspended driver or no insurance. So you may very commonly see a state trooper write a ticket for speeding and no insurance, and then warn for 3, 4, or 5 other violations, but rarely would you ever see that same state trooper write 3, 4, or 5, maybe 6 citations for other things. It just doesn't happen.
Okay, committee, anyone else have anything else on it?
Thank you have other witnesses, right?
We are.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have Kevin Campbell. We got a Scott something we can't.
Winkle.
We couldn't read it. And then Steve Burr, please.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. I'm struggling a little bit to start with this one. I have written testimony that's being distributed to you. Hopefully, you know me as somebody that attempts to operate my business with integrity.
You need
and
to
when
identify
I share
yourself?
Things, Kevin Campbell. I'm sorry, I'm the executive director of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police.
I thought I recognized you.
You probably did. This one's got me sideways today, and I'm very unhappy with what I just heard, and I appreciate the committee's allowing me to share just a few responses to this. And please forgive me if I get a little bit intense. I don't mean to. You know me as simply a smile on my face most of the time. I don't have one on my face today. What was intimated in the previous testimony was that, at least I heard, local law enforcement has an integrity issue, that there is a trend of giving tickets and citations for the purpose of raising revenue, and that this is occurring on our state highways to at least a degree that causes the state to have a public policy concern. When asked if there were specifics, there were some general ideas thrown out. A couple situations that may have occurred, a couple traffic team references, and when asked to provide the information, you were directed back to us to ask you to give you all our citations. This bill came to you without any discussion with the partners in law enforcement. There was no discussion with city or county law enforcement. We did not have the ability to address any concerns that may have been there in advance. And for that, I'm sorry, because we like to engage those things in advance. For this reason, I believe in Oregon that we have one of the best relationships between city, county, and state law enforcement of anywhere in the nation. And I say that having traveled the U.S. as the chair of all the other executive directors that do what I do, and I hear horror stories about how they fight with one another around the United States. In Oregon, we have a uniquely good relationship. Sure, there are rough spots, but we have a good relationship. It starts in our 16-week basic academy where our officers train together. That is unlike any other state, city, county, state. They train together with the same uniform up until the last week or two of their training so that they come out with relationships that last between city, county, and state when they arrive at their home assignment. Here's a few concerns I have with the bill, besides just the intimation that there's a problem here that somehow has escaped our notice. The first one I want to mention is this, and let me be really clear about this, because as I talked to our members, they were very confident about this. Let me read this. As a professional association of municipal law enforcement executives from throughout Oregon, our members strongly oppose any traffic enforcement effort that includes a motive of revenue raising as its goal. Our folks just don't want to do it. Proof of that, House Bill 3040, which you're going to be talking about at some point in the committee, that would allow judges to reduce the fines for penalties. What have you heard repeatedly is that our local law enforcement officers, local and county, not just state, are exercising their discretion. They're giving more warnings. The previous testimony made it sound like only the state police have that ability. Our local police officers are doing that as well. And I think it's important to point that out. I'm concerned about this bill because I believe it could put at risk what is a very good relationship. And in addition to that, I know that a lot of our police departments right now are up on the state highways in response to crashes and other incidents right now because of the lack of state police resources. Woodburn, I've got a letter here, and I think it's in the testimony, so I won't repeat it. In Woodburn, they are the primary law enforcement agency on the state highway there. Not because they want to. And the revenue from the fines that they're issuing up there do not cover their cost. So why would this be a good deal to do it? And yet this bill demands that there be an agreement entered into with the Oregon State Police in order to actually take these and claim them, if you will. My answer is different than that. Our association has been one of the biggest proponents of proper state police funding. They are not funded properly by the state right now, and it's a concern to us, but this, to me, is craziness in light of that. I want to see more troopers out on the road, and our members do. That's why we sit in front of Ways and Means. As an association, we bring folks from around the state to tell the committees in Ways and Means how important state police resources are to what we do statewide. So I apologize for being a little intense about this. I think this is a bad answer, and I'm sorry that I'm having to come in and oppose it, but I don't think it's the answer to what we're trying to do, nor do I think this is occurring on a widespread basis anywhere in the state. And so I would ask them to bring their examples forward as opposed to me coming forward with a bunch of citations from around the state to try to demonstrate that we're doing it wrong. To me, that's backwards, and I apologize for the intensity, and I deeply appreciate you letting me vent today on this bill. Thank you.
But I assume you don't want us to go to work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No.
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. Co-Chair Krieger, I will apologize for my penmanship. It was not something the nuns were successfully cured me of, but I assure you, I believe they left my ethical training intact. I, too, reacted quite badly to the previous panel. I would like to call the jog the committee's memory. And when the League of Oregon Cities testified in opposition to House Bill 2712, which was an adjustment on traffic fines that removed judicial discretion and we believe would cause a hardship on people of limited means who were getting citations, we opposed that bill on those grounds. I don't think that's the action of an association that would view traffic enforcement as a money-making endeavor. The cities in Oregon and the city managers and the city councils in this state view their police departments as a protector of the public first, foremost, and always, not as a revenue tool. Additionally, cities view their law enforcement is done best when it's done as a cooperative effort. Last week, when this committee heard testimony on the legislation to allow DUI checkpoints, it heard a police officer, I believe from the city of Albany, describe how they run saturation patrols, where Albany, Sweet Home, Lebanon, the county, and the state get together on a state highway, and they look for DUI, they do speed enforcement, traffic seatbelt violations, all in the cooperative interest of public safety and the protection of the public. This legislation would financially penalize those cities from engaging in those sorts of activities. I would ask the committee if citizens of Oregon will be safer in such an environment. And with that, I'm going to close my testimony. I'm eager for your questions.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Lieutenant Steve Burr. I'm with the Salem Police Department and am almost a 30-year veteran. I want to thank you for your service as well as allowing me a few minutes to address House Bill 3192. House Bill 3192 would obviously allow or would mandate that revenue from state highways be turned over to the state of Oregon. The city of Salem does not mine revenue off of I-5. As was somewhat suggested, I understand there may be one or two cities. I know Coburg has certainly come under some heat for some of that, but I think that paints law enforcement with a very broad brush that is inappropriate. We frequently go out on the freeway and cover the Oregon State Police when they need assistance because of their thin manning. If they need a drug dog or other suitable resource, we quickly respond to assist them in any way we could. Under this bill, though, you'd have to consider if one of my officers was leaving the Marion County Jail and was utilizing I-5 to get to a north district, if he saw a violation in front of him and he took the time to write that violation, 100% of the costs and the fine would go to the state of Oregon. There would be no reimbursement for our staff time in enforcing the law. There would be no staff time reimbursement for the adjudication of that violation, nor would there be any compensation for the costs of our finance department in collecting that fine. We're very proud of our relationship with the Oregon State Police, but we feel that this bill would only be counterintuitive to that relationship. Last year, the Oregon Department of Transportation funded through grants members of our agency to work what's called multi-agency traffic team projects. For instance, we worked a DUI project up in the vicinity of Detroit Lake to try and discourage boaters from coming back intoxicated. We've worked highway work zones. Under this bill, if we were working a state highway outside of the city, in which I think it's somewhat presumptuous that we should have to sign an agreement for every state highway within our city, but beyond that point, if we were assisting the Oregon Department of Transportation in trying to keep this state safe, we would give up all revenue from that, and the only thing we would be reimbursed for is our labor. That means the city of Salem, the citizens, the taxpayers of Salem, would in essence be subsidizing ODOT in their efforts to make this state a safer place. You've heard discussion about highways such as I-5 and Highway 99. Co-Chair Barker, I believe you touched on it. There are a number of streets that people don't even think about that are in essence state highways. For instance, Mission Street east of 12th Street, the Salem Parkway here in Salem, Liberty and Commercial Streets here in Northeast Salem, Wallace Road is another example. Each of these is a state highway, and I think it's presumptuous that we would need to sign an agreement that we can enforce those streets that are within our corporate city limits, and I believe it's preemptive on the part of the state to mandate that. In conclusion, in a time of budget constraints at all levels of government, House Bill 3192 would shift revenues generated by cities and counties away from them into the state. We believe House Bill 3192 would negatively affect its intended goal of preserving public peace, health, and safety. We urge you not to support this bill. Thank you. Is there any questions?
I have a couple I want to ask. My concern was around traffic teams and whether or not they actually are or are not writing multiple citations as a routine. In other words, 10 stops, would the average be more than one citation? The second part is, are those traffic teams always operating with marked vehicles, or are there sometimes unmarked patrol vehicles?
Chair Krieger and members of the committee, some traffic teams are mixed, city, county, state. Are you talking about those, or are you talking about a specific city or county traffic team that's acting independently in a region of the state?
Yes.
And was there a specific traffic team that you were made aware of that had this propensity to provide some, like, multiple stacking violations, or do you want me just to try to check and see if there are some by policy that do? My guess is that they're not doing stacking tickets. That's my guess. I would guess that the testimony that was provided in the previous panel about what OSP typically does is very typical for every traffic team, but I would be glad to take a look and see if I can
find some policy.
I'd
like to know so we can lay it to rest.
Okay.
And know the facts, you know, as they really come out to be. And then, of course, the other thing was whether or not they routinely use unmarked vehicles with traffic teams.
Okay,
I think
yes.
We need to know that. Committee members, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. And, Kevin, I, as I said earlier, I knew some nice people would come up here and have a rather strong response
so nice.
To some of the allegations made. And I think, first of all, there's a lot of moving parts in here that I don't know how you guys do your job, and gals, God bless you for doing it. I'm grateful for all of you out there to do it. How hard do you keep any data on how many citations the average officer hands out on the road every day in your respective jurisdictions? Is there anywhere to go find that? And you're not on trial, and you don't have to prove yourself innocent. But if it exists, and you're exactly right, Kevin, concrete examples were not given, but if concrete examples are available to prove someone wrong, I would think it would be in your best interest to come forward with them, and I'd appreciate it if they do exist. So there you go. Thank you. And Scott, you better work on that penmanship.
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, Representative Schaffler, duly noted. I hope my research associate is not watching on TV right now, but I'm happy to have assign her to conduct some of that research and get back to you. I'll break the bad news to her myself.
Okay, we do have another panel, but Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I heard from you three what I think was conflicting testimony. On the one hand, I heard an assertion that the local municipal police organizations don't issue citations for revenue. And then I heard a complaint that, well, if I issue a citation, I want to be paid for it.
Yeah.
So I'm having a hard time reconciling that, because I think the basic premise of this bill is essentially that if we patrol those highways, then the revenue should go to the state that built the highway, the state that is has primary the entity that has primary responsibility for patrolling it. But local police want to issue citations as part of their public safety role, but also then want to be paid for it. So I'm having a hard time with that.
Chair Krieger and Representative Olson, or I'm sorry, Representative Nolan, there's a difference between wanting to have some compensation for the time that your agency is having to dedicate to a state-free or a state highway that's not being patrolled or where there aren't resources adequate to take care of that state highway. That's different than saying, boy, we got to get out there so we can get revenue. And I'm just saying that it's not the policy of our police departments to be out on the road just to get revenue. On the other hand, when I talk to the Woodburn police chief, he says, we're out on the state highway all the time. The revenue that comes does not cover our cost. So in essence, what his point would be is the city is dedicating resources in order to patrol the state highway. So I agree. I understand what you're saying. It is, again, not our intent, and it is clear in talking to our police leaders, they, revenue as a motive is just not, it is so frowned upon in the profession. But if you're out responding and you are doing the work, if that revenue doesn't come back to the city, it's just a larger cost to the local government. That's all. I don't know if that was clear, but
I have two quick follow-ups. But local police are paid for by local property taxes. Isn't that a revenue source to provide your public safety mission?
Chair Krieger and Representative Nolan, I don't propose to be an expert on city government fiscal management, but I do think that revenue from these citations is a part of the overall city budget. It doesn't come to the police department. However, the cities do, of course, handle their budgets. I mean, this is nothing new. I don't believe that they actually budget based on a number of revenue sources, including property tax. It would be like saying that for the state, the general fund should cover all state police funding and be adequately fund that. I don't know that that's true, that we don't need additional sources of revenue for that either. But
And one final follow-up. All of you have asserted that you don't believe any local police are mining the state highways for the primary purpose of generating revenue. Would your position on this bill change if you had evidence to the contrary?
Chair Krieger and Representative Nolan, no, it would not, because the thing that I was arguing against was a statement that I believe was a blanket statement about a lack of integrity in local policing, about this is taking place around the state, and there may be a traffic team out there that is revenue focused. However, it would be the rare exception, not the rule. We would continue to oppose this bill.
Okay, Representative Garrett.
Thank you. Kevin, I think this is for you. It goes back to my service on the 2712 battlefield. What determines, when one of your local police makes a citation, what determines which court that is referred to, justice court, municipal court, or circuit court?
Actually, I'm going to refer this one to, if you don't mind, Lieutenant Burr, to answer, because obviously they do this on a regular basis.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Representative Garrett, we would cite into the court that has jurisdiction. So if it was within the corporate limits of the city of Salem, our preference would be to cite into the Salem Municipal Court, because we get 100% of the revenue. If we were outside, it would go to circuit court, in which we would get 50% back.
Follow up. There are instances where you could choose one or more venues, though, right? There are times when you could send it to one or the other?
Generally speaking, the circuit court does not want to see municipal court citations because they already have a significant caseload of their own. And so that's why we have a municipal court set up to listen to traffic matters.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may just... The reason I'm asking is because in the 2712 interim work group, one of the things we heard is that one of the reasons why there's unpredictability and a lack of uniformity in how citations are handled is because a judge's discretion about the amount of reduction you can take depends somewhat on which court you're in. And I certainly don't believe that there are officers out there writing citations for the purpose of generating revenue, at least not in a widespread fashion. But it does seem to me that the system is set up in a way that there could be some bad incentives created if officers, as you say, want to refer tickets into those courts where the city's going to maximize revenue. That has an impact on how we as citizens are treated by the citation writer. In one circumstance, I might be able to have a reduction of X percentage because it went to this court, but if the officer chooses to go to this court, that, you know, I only get a different percentage reduction. And so it's a long way of saying I think there may be an issue about trying to standardize some of this that doesn't get to the motives and, you know, integrity attacks, which I'm not interested in, but I'm not sure the system is set up the way it ought to be.
Thank you, Chair Krieger. Representative Garrett, I agree with you. I just think this bill does not accomplish that purpose. Thank you.
May I also address it? Co-chairs, Representative Garrett, one of the considerations is, though, we issue citations to try and enhance traffic safety, and those fines are paid by the person that violated the law. If we lose the revenue or the revenue is reduced, then the burden for those services is spread over the rest of the taxpayer. So quite in essence, it's a user fee for those people that violate it. We currently run 3 photo red light cameras. If they didn't make any money, we would be happy. We have seen a significant reduction in the number of red light violations, but it does come at a cost. We have to pay Redflex a considerable amount of money for the system to work. So the revenue is not viewed as a revenue stream. It's viewed as a means to reduce accidents at those dangerous intersections.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lieutenant Burr, real quick. Grant dollars enforcement. Does your agency get involved in either the DUI speed or seatbelt enforcement?
Co-chairs, Representative Olson, yes, we do, with ODOT.
Okay, just a follow-up. That doesn't stimulate generation. I mean, your officers would not be getting paid off of the volume of citations that are issued. They get paid by the hour then.
They are reimbursed, correct, by the hour by ODOT.
Okay.
But that reimbursement does not cover incidentals such as gasoline, wear and tear on their motorcycles, and those sorts of things, which would come from citation revenue.
Okay, Representative Wand.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just a couple of comments. I was on the City Council in Troutdale for a couple of years, and so I have some familiarity with municipal courts and these types of things. And first to Representative Nolan's comment, actually, in the City of Troutdale, the property tax revenues are not even sufficient to cover just the police budget for a year. So there are significant impacts and other resources that have to be available in a town that size in order to cover the police department. And secondly, the amount of dollars that we're talking about, at least for Troutdale's municipal court, it's not huge. It's not a budget buster either way, no matter what. I mean, it's the municipal court helps take a burden off the circuit courts that they don't want in the first place, and we have a local attorney who's retired that gets paid well under market to come in and be our municipal court judge, and the revenues that's generated are not significant enough for any decision makers in the City of Troutdale anyway to even be concerned with it. So I just wanted to throw that background in.
Okay. Tomei, I'm going to let you go ahead, and then we're going to stop on this panel because we're going to run out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lieutenant, so approximately how many tickets would a traffic officer write in a day? I know it's ballpark.
Co-chairs, Representative Tomei, I really couldn't answer that. I mean, it would depend on any number of days. And if it's bad weather, quite frankly, we have a hard time kicking them out of the station on their motorcycles.
I don't know if you want that on the record or not. All right, thank you. I'm going to call
you
up the next panel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Steve Beck, Paul Snyder, and John Powell, please. And gentlemen, I want you to have what time you need, but we do have 5 or 6 bills to try to get into work session before 3.
Mr. Chairman, co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, here opposing this bill. And Mr. Chair, I'm not going to take up a lot of the committee's time. Some of you have had the experience probably of knocking on doors and telling a family that their child is dead.
speed kills. If you travel Highway 22 headed to Bend, you've seen the accidents that have occurred there. If you're in law enforcement and you don't think somebody should be out there slowing that traffic down, I can't help you. Cannot help you. 97 from Lapine to Klamath Falls. If you don't think there should be somebody out there keeping people's speed down so that when a deer jumps out in front of them, only the deer dies, I can't help you. The Sheriff's Association several years ago let it be known that they would like all law enforcement agencies to have memorandums of understanding on how they operate. The union for the Oregon State Police went to the media, said we were trying to take over, they wouldn't be able to cite on I-5, and all we wanted was efficiency in law enforcement. So I can't help them either. With that, I'd be glad to answer your questions. Thank you.
Paul or Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. We also appear in opposition to House Bill 3192. And just keying off Mr. Powell's remarks, I'd like to add that the state police and the county sheriffs and city police have been working for years on cooperative policing agreements in order to avoid the kinds of problems that would otherwise appear in not understanding who's got jurisdiction over what, and in being able to provide the services to the public deserves at the least cost as possible to the public. And with respect to House Bill 3192, I think all the primary issues have already been raised. I'd like to point out that the text of the bill does not indicate in any respect what criteria are going to establish whether or not these policing agreements are going to be entered into. And if they're not entered into, then the default is that this is a jurisdiction that basically moves all the fines and assessments over to the state. No revenues for local governments, no revenues for justice courts, no revenues for municipal courts. And if for whatever reason the state police chooses not to enter into such an agreement, too bad. This doesn't make any sense. This doesn't make any sense at all to me. We strongly oppose House Bill 3192.
Co-chairs Barker and Krieger and members of the committee, my name is Steve Beck, and I am the executive director of the Oregon Council of Police Associations, and our members oppose this bill. Our organization represents over 5,400 public safety officers and support personnel around the state of Oregon. The city police officers and the deputy sheriffs, the represented ones in the independent unions. We oppose this bill because for many of the reasons that have already been stated, and I'm not going to cover those again. The reasons are clear. We were not consulted in the drafting of this bill or in any way whatsoever were our members involved or myself in our organization in the drafting of this bill. It has come as quite a surprise to us, and I find myself in a position of representing our members as a labor union in support of the chiefs and the sheriffs that are in opposition of this bill, and I know that it's angering my fellow union members behind me with the state police, but this bill is fraught with problems, and we would be happy to work with the State Police Association in assisting them in trying to work through the problems that they think exist. But at this point in time, we oppose this bill. Thank you.
Committee members, any questions? Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Can the panel help us understand what the implications are of accepting primary law enforcement responsibility for a stretch of highway, and if there are objections, what the basis is? Would it increase the fiscal responsibility? Is it their concern that the state police would not agree to do it? What are the, because it seems like there is that provision that would maintain the status quo built into the bill, and I'm interested in the panel's thoughts on that if you're prepared to discuss things.
Mr. Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Hicks, the way the bill seems to work is that absent that particular kind of agreement, there would be no distribution of fines and citation funding anywhere except to the state general fund. And if such an agreement were entered into, then the arrangement would be as the law is now, so that the amount of revenues, to the extent there were any, would be distributed equally between the law enforcement jurisdiction and the jurisdiction that operates the court that's involved. The absence of an agreement basically means there are no revenues whatsoever, none, to the local jurisdictions within the areas that are affected by this. I asked our county roads department folks to give me some sense for, by the way, what's a state highway? And the response I got was, it's anything that's maintained by ODOT. And I said, can you translate that into some numbers for me? What are we talking about here? Well, I think members of the committee, as well as members of the panel, have already described that pretty well. All these highways, Highway 97, Highway 101, Highway 58, the highway that goes, Highway 99 through Milwaukee, a number of highways go through cities, and they go across counties. And so this represents a huge change in how things would work. And the problem that I have with it is that it's offensive to all the relationships that have been built up over the years among all the law enforcement agencies. There's always a sense of competition. There has been. I've noticed it ever since I started with AOC 31 years ago. And I've come to the conclusion that this competition is something that's healthy, because there's a balance there. And state police would like more authority over more investigations of criminal offenses, and county sheriffs would like to have more authority over the things that the state police does. And yet they manage to work very cooperatively together, and they manage to do a terrific job given the resources that they all have to work with. And this would upset that balance significantly.
We're going to allow one follow-up, short, and a short answer. Give you a minute on your answer, no more.
For Mr. Powell, I'll just ask one person on the panel. Rather, I guess I'm asking, why not just enter into the agreement? I'm not asking to attack. I need to know.
Barker and Krieger and Representative Hicks. This agreement would apply only to roadways. And the need changes from time to time in terms of when constituents of a sheriff call and say, we've got speeding in a certain place, we'd like you to do something about it. The sheriff needs to respond to that. And that changes from time to time. It changes with development. It changes with a casino being added. It changes by a recreational area across the mountains getting more popular. So it changes. If what we were urging was a memorandum of understanding of the entire envelope of law enforcement and not a street by street contract with another agency.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Representative Betty Kopp. Representative, you missed all the fun.
I never miss all the fun.
You must have been listening on the TV. Huh?
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Barker and Co-Chair Krieger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Betty Comp. I represent House District 22. That's Woodburn, Jervis, Brooks, and Northeast Salem. And believe it or not, I could tell you what every county road is, what every city road is, and what every state highway I traveled to get here. And I believe all of our law enforcement individuals know those facts as well as I do. I do know where Highway 214 turns into 213 in Woodburn, and it is they do butt up to each other, surprise, surprise, but that is not anything that's insurmountable. You have my testimony in front of you, but I'm going to sway away from it a little bit. And I know you've heard all this already, but the bill 3192 would credit traffic offense fines collected on state highways to the criminal fines and assessment account and the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Many of us in this room, there's only, I think, one of you that wasn't here in 2007, where we stood as a body and said, we want 24/7 on our state highways. We had gone down appreciably in those numbers over the years. We did not have any dedicated funds. They had been taken for other purposes for many years. And we said our public deserves to have safety on its highways and freeways. And so we invested, once again as a body, to make sure that we had state troopers on our roads. This bill is about public safety. I understand you've heard a lot about revenue today. Well, yes, good members, colleagues, it is about revenue. When we only had just a few, I can't remember the statistics off the top of my head, but just a few state troopers on the road. Yes, we had to sit there and say, is this how we protect Oregon? And it is not how we protect Oregon. Do our agencies work together now? Yes, they do. Will they still? Yes, they will. But when you look at the bigger picture and you have 2-3 officers here in your midst, you know that the biggest part of their day was not on how many cars that they could stop and ticket. It was about whether you have a domestic violence, it's about whether you have another crime scene that you need to go to, or heaven forbid, that you need to go to a bomb site. That's how our agencies work together. That's how our state works together. These funds would support our state troopers. They would support our forensic lab. We have a forensic lab that it's basically doesn't have much funding, has no direct allocation. This funding would help those state labs for our forensic work. And so that you know, it's a shared community. Not only do state troopers use the forensic lab, but so does every other police officer in our state. We have a responsibility as a body to look for the future, not only look at now. And this bill is to make sure we can keep our public safe. We know what the bills we've passed about criminals, about all of our crimes that we have, the drug addicted crimes, our stealing off our farms and our communities. The list just goes on and on and on. The things that we want our officers to be responsible for to keep us safe. And it does take a whole group to do this. And I ask you today, if you have other questions, please, if I can be assistance, I can be here for you as much as I can. But you have had good experts here in front of you. But this is a bill that I do support. My own local police chief emailed me this morning and asked me to withdraw my support of this bill, but he did not have one statistic right that I could see about the bill that he wrote to me about. And so if things need to be clearer language or needs to have some improvements, that's what our process is about. And I know that I would certainly be willing to look at if there's something that's missing from this bill, well, then let's take care of it. So with that, I thank you for your time, and I'm available for any questions you might have.
Questions, Andy?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, thanks. Representative, I'm just curious. You had a chance to talk with Chief Scott Russell. Have you had a chance to talk with Sheriff Jason Myers?
Not today. I have not talked to them previously about it either.
Okay, thanks.
Co-Chair Barker.
Thank you. In my county, Washington County, there's very few state police up there at all. And we see them mainly on Highway 26 in the west end of the county. But so we have Highway, just off the top of my head, 219, 210, 217, Highway 8. So all the money that my sheriff and the local Beaverton City and the other city police write, then they wouldn't get, all that money would be diverted away from them.
No, To my understanding of the bill, the intent of the bill is if you're on a state highway, that money goes to the state. If you're on a county road, that goes to the county. That doesn't
those
change.
Those are all state highways, and there's no state police up there to patrol those. Except,
well, that's a darn good question.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, okay. You got me.
All right, thank you.
I didn't mean to gay.
No. I didn't.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, co-chairs.
We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3192.
Open a public hearing. We're open a work session on House Bill 2828.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2828 was heard on March 2nd. It has no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impacts on two of the amendments we are considering. This bill creates an unlawful employment practice if the employer interrupts employee insurance when the employee is scheduled for or attends jury service, and does the same if the employer discharges, threatens to discharge, intimidates, or coerces an employee for reason of service as a juror. So there are two amendments. There is the dash one, which specifies the employee's elected employer coverage, which came from the carrier of the bill. And there's the dash two, which specifies that the bill only applies to businesses with 10 or more employees.
Okay, any discussion? Just a second. Chair, I move the dash one amendments into House Bill 2828.
Representative Krieger moves dash one amendments into House Bill 2828. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments into House Bill 2828.
Representative Krieger moves the dash two amendment into House Bill 2828. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
You object?
I would rather not move the dash twos.
Okay.
Well, I'll lift the gavel back up and let us have the discussion. The dash twos change it so that it would apply to an employer with more than 10 employees. Okay. And that's all you just...
I don't think we should make that exception.
Okay.
I'm not going to make a big stand about it, but I think it should apply to all employers.
Okay. Is there any further discussion?
I can't get this bill right in front of me, but did the writer of the bill agree to the two amendments? The sponsor of the bill?
The dash ones were brought by the sponsor.
As just a fix for in his opinion, and then he was informed of the dash two and the desire for the dash two, and was fine if that helped the bill along.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we have a roll call on the dash two amendments, please.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
No.
Representative Wan?
Aye.
Representative Blitzner?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hick?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
No.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye. Dash twos are introduced.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2828 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2828 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan.
I should declare a conflict of interest because you just exempted my business by the passage of the amendment, but I'm going to vote yes.
Representative Olson.
I'll struggle with that.
Aye.
Well, now I have to ask. This is a broad enough class where we do not have to declare conflict. Thank you very much.
Aye.
Representative Cummings.
Aye.
Representative
Wise.
Aye.
Representative Lisbon.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Harris.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
Motion carried. And we'll ask Representative Witt to carry that bill.
That's fine.
Open a work session on the House bill. And before I open that, we are not going to hear House bill. We're not going to work House bill 3040 today because we don't have the fiscal back yet. We'll have a work session on House bill 2849.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. House bill 2849 was heard on March the 2nd as well. It has no revenue impact and a indeterminate fiscal, though likely minimal, from fiscal office. This bill changes or increases the penalty for crime of criminal mistreatment in the first degree to a Class B felony if the victim is 65 years or older.
Is there any discussion?
Chair, Representative Creek, move that House Bill 2361 be moved to the floor if they do pass.
No, we're not on that bill. Right, 2849.
Which one?
2849.
There I am. All right, 2849 to the floor if they do pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2849 to the floor if they do pass.
Mr. Chair, did we already move an amendment to this bill?
No.
I have a dash one on my.
Yes, there is a dash one that came from Rep. Thompson's office. It came from a constituent of his. It was not brought up in the public hearing.
Thank you.
And I, if I may, Mr. Chair, I got a letter from Representative Hunt's office that did not support that amendment.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And Representative Thompson didn't ask for it. So.
Okay,
Representative Krieger moves House Bill.
Can I get a question of counsel? The message was that there is an indeterminate, probably minor or minimal fiscal, and yet the summary of the bill says that it punishes this new crime or increases the punishment to a maximum of 10 years imprisonment. I don't have the fiscal here. Does the fiscal indicate that it's minimal in the current biennium, but becomes significant? A 10-year imprisonment is a non-trivial expense to the state.
I spoke with Tim Walker in fiscal office. He said it was indeterminate just because they couldn't. There's no stats based on the age of, I believe, the victim. So he said there'd be no prison bed increase, and the only change would be defense costs, because a defense lawyer would have a higher payment for defending higher penalties.
And we think it's more egregious. I mean, the crime seems pretty significant.
Mr. Chair, would it be within this biennium, though?
It wouldn't.
No, because the added time would be in the out years.
Yeah, if there was added time, it would be later on.
And you can't retroactively impose this additional penalty.
No, correct.
So it would be for prosecutions that happen in the future, and so then...
And it doesn't affect this budget, and that's another reason you don't have a revenue.
You know, it says, though, that we value people who are older than 65, which I'm not there yet, but I'm getting, more than we value people who are not older than 65.
We've had this discussion in the committee before on bills with enhancing the penalty, and it's because they think people are more, the senior citizens are more vulnerable, and they just use the 65-year date, I guess, because that's the old Social Security date, was where that came in. They wanted to cut it off somewhere, and that's where they cut it off.
I appreciate your comments, Mr. Co-Chair. I think it also makes a policy statement on behalf of the legislature, which I can't join.
Okay. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Yes.
Representative
Wan? Aye.
Representative
Wisman? Yay.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. We'll ask Representative Hunt to carry that bill. Open a work session on House Bill 2698.
And co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2698, as introduced, modify the period of time within which a person could petition the court to set aside a criminal arrest or a conviction. Subsequently, there was introduced a -1 amendment. This was introduced with the blessing of the proponent, Representative Bailey. This amendment would essentially take out all of the language in House Bill 2698 as regarding the setting aside of convictions, leaving only the setting aside of arrest. Record of arrests. There's no projected revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact. The -1 amendment has not yet been adopted.
And could you say again what it does, please?
Yes, absolutely. The intro version, this is Representative Bailey's bill, had to do with the setting aside of a conviction after a certain amount of time. Yep. It also pertained briefly to the setting aside of any record of an arrest. The portion of the bill by amendment, the -1, pertaining to the setting aside of convictions has been eliminated. We are retaining only the language pertaining to the setting aside of arrests, record of an arrest.
And that has alleviated the problems with the District Attorney's
yes.
Association?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So we need the -1s.
That is correct.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the -1s into House Bill 2698.
Representative Krieger moves the -1s into House Bill 2698. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2698 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2698 to the floor with the due as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan,
yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative
Wan. Aye.
Representative Wisman.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Mr. Barker?
Aye.
Motion carries. We'll ask Representative Bailey to carry that bill. Next, open a work session of House Bill 3066.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3066 authorizes the Department of Justice to establish a restitution collection pilot program in geographically dispersed counties of the state. There are a number of amendments of this, but the proponent wishes that we consider principally the -5. The -5 makes, and if you look at the text of the -5, it repeats the entire bill. The important part is on page 1 between line 9 and line 15. Two changes made here. First of all, the allowance that a county may employ a restitution clerk on at least a part-time basis, as opposed to the full-time basis that was implied by the introductory version of the bill. And secondly, sub B, in addition to the grants required under paragraph A of this subsection, the department may make grants from the fund to fund other positions, activities, and expenses related to the collection of restitution. If there are any questions about the import of that amendment, there is a representative of the proponent of the bill present to answer questions as needed. As amended, House Bill 3066 is projected to have no revenue impact. It is projected to have a fiscal impact, and I will note that there is a subsequent referral in place to Ways and Means. The fiscal explanation that was provided self-describes as being minimal. Quote, the agency, the fiscal impact isn't minimal, but the statement is, the agency anticipates having a fiscal impact associated with this bill. The amount of the impact is still being determined. A more complete fiscal analysis on the bill will be prepared as the measure is considered in the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Is there a sunset on this bill?
Co-chairs and co-chair Krieger, yes, there is a sunset in this bill. It sunsets in 2014.
That's a good bill.
Representative Wan.
Just a question about
Section 1, Subsection 2B, page 1, lines 12 through 15. Question is, conceptually, would that allow a district attorney to ask the department to issue a grant for a private firm to engage in some of this work on their behalf instead of only with a DA's? I mean, maybe we have a smaller DA's office and they want to hire the local attorney or get a grant to the local attorney, get some help on that kind of operation. Is that subsection B broad enough to allow something like that, that may be a little more non-traditional?
And co-chairs, Representative Juan, first of all, note you're making reference to subsection B in the introductory version of the bill, correct, not as amended?
No, I'm looking at the amendment.
Okay, as amended? All right. Well, there, as I mentioned previously, there are proponents of the bill present, and I caught them nodding in the affirmative. I know they're available to talk to if you want to.
Okay, that's good enough.
That's good enough. Thank you very much.
Is there any further discussion?
Can I discuss?
Thank
you, Mr. Chair. Okay, just one note. I realize this is a policy committee, but whether we're gonna absorb a fiscal impact is to a certain extent the policy decision. This session in particular, I continue to be adverse to the fiscal implications of this as I perceive them, and so I'm not supporting either the amendment or the bill in its final form.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Trott, move the dash fives into House Bill 3066.
Representative Creer moves the dash fives into House Bill 3066. Is there any discussion? We know of one objection. Is there any other objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 3066 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
To Ways and Means.
Ways and Means, excuse me.
Representative Creer moves House Bill 3066 as amended with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Juan?
Aye.
Representative Lisnett?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Is there any further business to come before the committee? Adjourned.